Devin Almonte here. Welcome. This is Insight Out, where we learn to look at our faith from God's eyes and figure out how to live that out in our everyday. I checked my Uber rating the other day. It's 4.89. That means that some drivers will not even pick me up.
When you set your driver rating to 4.9 for the rider, sure, it limits the amount of requests you get. But, well, A, you limit the amount of bad drivers, bad riders that you get. But it also gives you time to stay in a surged area. Like yesterday, I was in Brickell and there was a $7.50 surge. So I stayed there and I activated. I got the $7.50 surge. And instead of getting bombarded with every crappy rider who's below a 4.9, I was able to select a short ride with time.
So yeah, according to this driver, I don't make the cut. And honestly, I think I'm a great passenger. I mean, what in the world would I be weeded out for? I'm willing to engage in conversation. I don't slam the doors. I'm clean. I don't even mess with the radio or the AC. Some of the drivers I've had play music that I don't care for, but I tolerate it. I tip well. I feel like I'm actually waiting on the driver, which is kind of backwards. Glad I'm not alone. Here's Jimmy Fallon talking about this on the Drew Barrymore show. This is 3 years ago.
You looked up your Uber rating?
I just did, and I'm a little upset because I think I'm very nice to my Uber drivers, beyond nice. At one point, I even offered to drive. Yeah, I'm the best person you want. I don't want music. I don't want anything. I don't complain. I don't do anything. I got a 4.88. Yeah, well, this is going to be a disaster of a society where it's like, hi, I'm a 3.5. Yeah, I figured.
So what is going on here? Today, we are talking about what has been creeping into our everyday lives. It's not just government intrusion, but it's like more of a soft version of social credit that's quietly and subtly scoring us in ways that we never signed up for. And it's moving beyond our systems. It's becoming this philosophy, one that's reshaping how our worth and value is assigned in culture. You've probably heard of China's social credit system, which is very public. It's rigid and it's completely government controlled. They like that. Probably the most visible and controversial example of behavior-based surveillance. That's what it is. And thank goodness we're not like that. Or are we? Because similar systems are quietly emerging around the world, especially here in the United States. Except ours aren't necessarily built by the state. They're being built by many private companies, apps, insurers, data brokers, these platforms, and each one is assigning like a invisible score. And they're deciding who is getting access, who gets ignored, who gets left behind. All of that happening with very little oversight or transparency. We like to think that a comment on social media that we make or just swiping, giving a thumbs up or thumbs down on our phone is harmless. But what if that little tiny digital decision that we make is what's keeping us from renting a car, booking a hotel, getting a job? That's the world that we are drifting toward. Not quite the scoreboard that forces conformity and compliance like China, thank goodness, but it's something similar but a little more subtle. It's a little sneakier because we've got a web of apps and algorithms that are tracking everything from our Netflix habits to our grocery runs that really are whispering to all of these companies about our character and behavior behind the scenes. We're seeing this more and more. Public and private companies, insurers, landlords, tech platforms, they're taking a lot of this behavioral data to score, rank, restrict access at times to everyday things. It's not just about credit anymore. It's about how we drive, what we search, what we post, even how fast we might pick up our DoorDash order. Companies like LexisNexis, they are compiling massive amounts of consumer behavior profiles, things that we probably don't even know that are being tracked. And all of these systems, these monitoring systems, are getting normalized and quite seamlessly too, and quietly. And it's blurring the lines between what I would call corporate convenience and authoritarian control. This isn't just about companies collecting our data. I mean, that's an issue too, privacy and all of those kinds of things. But it's taking that data to put us on a scoreboard, to score us, assigning value based on behavior, and then silently rewarding or punishing us for that, which is kind of a nicer way of saying dystopian takeover. My concern is without stronger privacy laws or transparency, we are going to find ourselves in a web of just a mess of these scoring systems that are all powered by AI, and they're going to go in and reach into more areas of our life and make assumptions about our lives that may or may not be true and just reshape the freedoms that we so take for granted. This is not just a tech issue or a policy debate. It's raising moral, spiritual, ethical questions that we have to face. We cannot ignore this any longer. Because who or what gets to decide what good character and good behavior look like? What happens when these algorithms are taking the place of human judgment? Or worse, they are going to replace God's standards with these man-made metrics, which we're already seeing happen. It should entirely freak us out. At the same time, let's not panic. We are not called to panic as Christians. We are called to pay attention. And so by the end of this, my hope is that we can explore just a little bit more deeply how these social credit systems are really slithering and sneaking their way into everyday life and what they reveal about our culture, our modern culture's warped sense of worth, identity, and how we as believers can live by faith in a world that is pushing us to conform and looks to grade us and evaluate us on social and cultural compliance rather than our character. So let's start with the really obvious one here, which is China, okay, when it comes to social credit. Their version of social credit isn't exactly a secret. It's not hiding in an app's privacy policy somewhere. It's front and center. They let you know that they're doing this. They've been doing this since the early 2000s, building this entire system, which was more formalized in 2014, which wasn't that long ago. And they're scoring citizens on this scale from 350 to 950 based on everything, paying taxes, social media posts, jaywalking, even who you hang out with. Okay, all of this kind of goes into this scoring system. Good scores unlock good perks. You get easier loans, priority travel, discount on services. Oh, isn't that so nice? But look out for those lowest scores, because then you might get banned from flights, you could be locked out of jobs, or your kids might be denied access to certain schools. Things like that. And it's not fully implemented yet, but it is advanced enough to really shape daily life. Now, what I'm about to show you or have you listen to is satire, but it seems quite accurate in my opinion. There's an episode of Black Mirror. This is a British TV series. It launched back in 2011, and this episode is called Nosedive. Fictional satire, yes, but it does show a world where our interactions, social interactions, are rated and your score dictates your life. It's not far from China's reality. Listen to this.
The society that Lacey lives in is one where a rating system has become what people lead their lives by. If they have a high rating, then they're welcomed by many. However, if people have a low rating, then it prevents you from doing general things like living in certain neighborhoods and being casted away by certain people due to the fact that they don't want to be associated with you. This is something that affects Lacey and is what the main story follows.
Scary. So scary. Go watch the episode if you haven't seen this. It might freak you out, but it's really good. I think it's still on Netflix. And yeah, we might not look that insane yet here in the United States, but we are building systems that echo that. And that's where the issue is shifting, just from being watched to being judged. It's not simply the loss of privacy that's most dangerous, why that's obviously an issue. It's the power that these systems have to define what is acceptable and what's not. From a biblical perspective, what gets to me is who is defining and who gets to define good behavior, good character. China, they say, it's us. It's the state. Loyalty to the government, environmental compliance, staying quiet on dissent, that's all righteousness. But as Christians, what? You know, we know that true moral law doesn't come from our government. It comes from God. And that's where this whole conversation turns, because it's not just about being watched. It's about what's being measured and who is the one doing the measuring. I do understand why some of these systems exist. Okay, take Uber, for example. Uber drivers don't want to deal with rude passengers or somebody that's throwing up in the back seat after being out all night. Lenders, they want to make sure that we're actually going to pay them back. Employers want people who are trustworthy and reliable. All of that's fair. But what I am seeing is that there is a much deeper issue, is that these systems have quietly outgrown their original purpose. What started as a tool for safety or, say, accountability, it's now being used and modeled as a structure for control, exclusion, and yes, sometimes even discrimination, not so much in the terms of race or gender, but in terms of our social fit in society. Let's go back for a second. Back in the 1950s, credit reports, they were like literally handwritten notes by bank clerks, and it was kind of complicated. It had a lot of bias. People were denied loans based on race and gender, even your zip code. Very subjective and not exactly fair. Then in 1989, FICO introduced the whole credit score system, meant to bring financial trust and objectivity to the matter. But here we are in 2025, and that whole credit score system has gone way beyond seeing if we are just good for a loan. There's a service called Experian Boost. Maybe you've heard of that. Over 3.9 million people use it to help raise their credit score. On average, you might see it increase by 13 points, and you do so by connecting things like your Netflix subscriptions, your phone bills, even your gym membership. Sounds very convenient, right? Hey, you're going to get some extra credit points, raise that credit score. But here's the trade-off. We're giving them access to our bank account data, our streaming habits, our entire digital footprint, really our behavior, our living. And then that data is often sold to third-party marketers. So we're not just boosting our score, we're selling our lifestyle. And then what if there's a day that they don't like our lifestyle or our behavior? FICO's got newer models too. There's one called FICO 10T, where they're looking at trended data, which they're, instead of just like a quick snapshot of your financial history and your credit history, it's almost like a video, like watching how you operate your life. So that credit score isn't just about money, it's about how we lived, all wrapped in the language of financial risk. So you see that shift. Our lifestyle, in a sense, is our credit score now. Someone other than us is determining if that's good. Just to clarify, I don't think all the monitoring is bad. I understand why companies do it if they're handing out a loan. Of course, you want to know a little bit about the person who you're giving money to, that makes sense. And when it comes to fraud, this is a huge issue. I want that protection. If there are charges that don't match my usual purchase behavior, then the system flags it. But all of that begins to open the door to some questionable activity. It allows for bigger problems, more control, more sinister behavior, begin to lose some of our freedom. Here's the former SEC chairman, Gary Gensler, testifying before Congress.
Look, I mean, right now you can sweep the data up from your automobile driving. It's called telematics. You can sweep up your social media usage and sort of based upon that, decide how to underwrite and make a loan. There's research, actually, interesting research that shows if you capitalize your letters for pronouns in your emails, you're better credit than if you don't. I'm giving this away a little bit. And if you charge your phone every night, you're better credit. Believe it or not. So now, what if it happens to be that people that capitalize their letters are of a certain race or ethnicity or gender, and it has nothing to do with credit, but then we're embedding something into the systems?
That's slightly terrifying. Car insurance tracking devices, that can be another trap. They lure you in with the promise of discounts, but once you opt in, they're tracking everything. When you drive, where we go, how we brake. Here's a woman on TikTok who apparently worked or works for one of these insurance companies. Listen.
Yes, the companies that I've worked for that had telematics did ding third shift workers. However, and we had had conversations about it, like, should we be doing this or should we be looking to change it? And ultimately, we determined that, yes, if you work third shift, that, you know, maybe we're not the insurance company for you, or maybe you shouldn't be using telematics.
Let's say we're picking up a friend from the airport. Okay, their flight gets in 9 p.m., except flights are never on time. So for some reason, this one gets delayed till 2 a.m. And we're the good Samaritan. We're being the caring, hospitable friend. We climb out of bed to be there for our friend. And guess what? Our kind gesture could be flagged as high-risk driving behavior just because it's happening late at night. These apps are not just judging our driving. They are judging our life. Late night errand? Yeah, it's a little risky. Oh, you're going for a weekend trip? That's a little questionable. You like to help people out? Oh, well, that is between you and the algorithm now. And I hate to say it, I am just waiting for digital currency to take over when our dollar collapses. Sorry for all the doom and gloom, because we know this type of stuff is coming. They'll roll it out with the same messaging. It'll help prevent fraud. It's easier. It's more convenient. We'll make it super easy and free for you to jump on board, just like we did with the COVID vaccine. We'll just give you quick, easy access, and it will help you and it will simplify your life. Until it becomes less about money and convenience and more about our behavior. So when our dollar, hopefully not, but when it becomes digital, we will no longer be dealing with just currency. It will be used as a lifestyle tool. Banks are already asking what we are spending our money on. Here are a couple of TikTokers talking about that.
I wrote a commission check to one of my agents today. They took it to TD Bank to both deposit and take out some money. So it was a commission check and it was for a very large deal. And so they had, I shouldn't say very large, it was significant, right? So $15,000 check to TD Bank. They wanted to deposit 10 and take out 5 or keep 5 of their own money. It's their money, right? So the person behind the counter at TD Bank says, so why are you taking out $5,000? And the agent was kind of confused and was like, I don't understand why you would ask me that question. And TD's like, well, I have to write something down. What? Excuse me? I have to, like, to take my own money out as cash, I have to give TD Bank now a reason.
I closed my Bank of America account because I went to take out $1,000 or something. They asked me what it was for, but the guy didn't want to give me the money until I told him what it was going to be for. So I closed my account right then and there.
We are entering a world where our spending and our habits and behaviors aren't just being recorded. It's being interpreted. There's a difference there. We've got data brokers. There's LexisNexis and Spokio. They build profiles on us, on things like our social media, our shopping habits, even our political leanings. And then they will sell those profiles to businesses so they can decide whether or not we are trustworthy or deemed to be of good character. This is very real. We can actually pull our own report. I'll drop a link in the show notes, but you can go to the LexisNexis consumer disclosure website, and they've got an online request form. We're allowed, I think, one free report per year. It doesn't affect your credit. This isn't like a hard pull when you apply for a loan. But, you know, it's worth looking at. We might be surprised by what they've gathered or what they assume about us. And more importantly, how that information might be used to assess our value, not just as a customer, but as a person, as a human being. And what's so crazy is if we try to just stay out of this mess, not have a digital footprint, we can be penalized for that. You try to go off the grid, AI systems are going to flag you and your lack of data as suspicious or sus, as my kids would say. And when we go to try to get a house or a loan for something or a new job, and we don't have a digital footprint, some of those people might think, well, what's with them? They might be hiding something. Even our values can get flagged. So we're sort of being forced into jumping on board with all of these systems as our access pass. And if we don't, It's like we're just being put into our own prison that we've created for ourselves. Or at least that's what they want us to think. Romans 12:2 warns us, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. That verse speaks directly into the tension that I think we're living in today, where conformity is being praised and algorithms are defining morality and what good behavior looks like. That is where we are today. That's where we're heading. But we are not called to adjust ourselves to fit the world's standards. We are called to pursue what God calls good. So it's obedience over approval, conviction over convenience. Because these social scoring systems are attempting to reshape our choices in ways that start to pull us away from that biblical conviction. That's not good. That's not what we want. 1 Samuel 16:7 reminds us that man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. And algorithms, they don't see the heart. They're not seeing the grace. They're not seeing the mercy. They're not seeing the redemption. They see data points, not character. And most of us, I would say, we're probably already caught up in it, whether we realize it or not. And it does shape how we present ourselves on the outside. I know it's affected me. I second guess things. Wait, you know, this post, it might come off too bold. I should probably reword it so I don't get flagged. Or, oh, this sounds a little too extreme. Maybe I'll tone it down a little. Have you felt that pressure, that subtle nudge to tweak who you are just to stay on the algorithm's good side? Beginning to think that algorithm is another word for Satan at this point. He's sneaky and he can start to pull us off course. But God calls us to be faithful right where we are. And yes, we live with kindness. We live with love. We are to extend grace, not self-righteousness. And we do that boldly, anchored in his truth and not shaped by fear of disapproval, fear of lack of points. God's economy values what no system on earth can measure. Things like our heart and our repentance and our love for others and our obedience when nobody is watching. As a follower of Jesus, I know that I am called to live by his standard and his ways, which are for my ultimate good, for your ultimate good. We're not called to live by society's scorecard and unit of measure. Our freedom and confidence all come from him. So if you've been listening to my podcast, very much on my heart is what we do about these things. Like, how do we live out our faith? It's very, I find it a lot easier to take in knowledge, to hear it. I mean, we have commentators all the time. We hear all these things and the complaints and, oh my gosh, and this is an issue. That's an issue. And then it just sort of stops there. And it's good to be aware, but how do we actually put these things, our faith, into practice? What can we actually do about all of this? Then we've got to ask, whose standards are we trying to live up to? So my hope is to share some ideas with you. I hope you can share some ideas with me as well regarding this whole idea of social credit and social currency. We can't really just chuck our phones and computers into a lake or move off the grid, although sometimes I think that would be really nice. I totally get that. But the truth is, we're here today for a reason. There's a reason we're born today. We are called to be in the world, not of it. And so that means we figure out how to live wisely inside a system that we didn't design, that is a beautiful God-given design that's been subject to a fallen nature because of sin, and not let these broken systems define us. And I think that starts by staying awake. I'm not talking about being hyper alert or paranoid. I'm talking about being aware and curious as we move into this new world that is being shaped by AI and algorithms, big corporations and companies. We've just got to learn how to filter everything through truth more than we ever have had to do before. We start with little things that we can actually do. We don't have to move the whole mountain. That's what we have Christ for. He's the mountain mover. But we can pull our credit reports. Okay, we can do that for free. Annualcreditreport.com, I think, is one of them. Just be careful because too many pulls can also affect your credit. Look at the data brokers, what they have on us, LexisNexis, Spokio. These companies are tracking far more than we realize. Like I said, I'm going to do this myself. I want to see what I find out. So that's a little bit of the awareness. Then conviction. You know, we're called to make, you know, as Christians, decisions based on conviction, not convenience, not what earns us points in the eyes of the world. I had a friend recently who told me her niece graduated college, and she said that her niece said she wrote every paper just to match what the professor wanted to hear so she would pass the class, and she didn't share what she really thought. And, you know, she's probably right. She might be penalized for that if she fell outside of what is considered acceptable opinion. And how sad, but I get it. We've all done this in one way or another. But if we are not speaking truth or even sharing our opinions, what are we even doing? Like, what are we even learning? Whose approval are we actually living for? Another action step, we can write our legislators, our public officials, we can express concern that credit monitoring systems, they're drifting into behavioral tracking. We can ask our banks hard questions. Are they using what's called ESG criteria? Maybe you've heard of that. It stands for environmental, social, and governance. And on paper, it sounds like corporate ethics, and it does have to do more with corporations than it does individuals. But at the same time, once we open these doors, that can start to trickle down to individuals, like what we donate, who we support, how we live. It's already being discussed. And I think we can be raising our families with this awareness as well. I mean, our kids are growing up in a world that is so different from the world that we grew up in. They have everything tracked and scored and liked and monitored and just watched 24/7. They desperately need to know early on that their character is what matters, not their compliance with digital systems and the free apps that want all their data. Not everything convenient is good for our soul. And we can talk to our kids about what it means to protect their privacy, to tell the truth, to walk in freedom. If I had to sum up where I think we're headed over the next decade or so, I'd say there are three things at stake: truth, privacy, and freedom. And as believers, those are things we're not just called to protect, we're called to model. It's easy to hear all of this and hate the systems. They're not, I mean, I wouldn't say they're inherently evil, just like money or power, they can be used for good or evil. And in a broken world, we know there are going to be cracks. And that's where, as believers, I think we're called to bring Christ in. So that is where I will leave us today, because this isn't just about being informed, it's choosing how we respond, how we live and love and stand out as believers in the middle of this mess that we find ourselves in. And we might not be able to unplug from everything. We may have to use the systems that we are critiquing, but we can still choose to live differently inside of them, in the midst of them, and we can stay alert without being afraid, and we can act wisely without giving up our peace. And so we can choose conviction over that conformity, even when it's costly. Because we serve a God who sees beyond these algorithms and the data points, and he looks straight at our hearts. And so even if we never win by the world's standards, and even if we get steamrolled by these systems that try to reshape how we live and what we're allowed to say, there is no reason to fear, because we already know how the story ends. Praise God. We see it all unfold through the lens of faith, and we give thanks for the kind of goodness that never shifts with culture. It's God's unshakable, everlasting goodness that totally extinguishes the lies and attacks that come our way. Ephesians 6:16, above all, take the shield of faith with which you will be able to quench all the fiery darts of the evil one. That's what we need to be ready for. And so as the lines continue to blur about what it means to be a good person in this broken world, what earns approval in society, we have to ask, are we willing to stand firm with that shield of faith? Are we willing to let go of convenience to hold on to what's eternal? Whose approval are we chasing? Thanks for joining me on Insight Out. This topic's too big for one episode, so we're going to keep talking in my Facebook group, Insight Out Community. You can find it located on the tabs at insightout.media on Facebook. Share your stories. Maybe you've felt the pressure of these systems. Maybe you're afraid. Maybe you're doing something to fight it. Maybe all of this is making you freak out even more. If that's the case, then come join us in the group, because the whole point is to encourage one another that we have everything that we need to live this life well and finish the race well. Please go ahead and share this episode with somebody that might need to hear it. If you can subscribe, like it, that would just mean a lot to me. It helps get the word out. And until next time, let's choose wisely, choosing conviction over conformity, and live our lives Insight Out. See you next time.